Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 314 of the Roguecast, recorded November 24th, 2020. The Old Roadhouse.
All right, so it is the week of Thanksgiving, and it is a slightly weirder week because Anna is out for Thanksgiving stuff.
Yep. So we have to have Nick watching the front desk.
Yep.
And we're podcasting, and Nick is here in spirit, and we will speak in his voice with a puppet, which you can't see, but I have here with me.
Yep.
A Nick puppet when we talk about the Ten of Swords X-Men stuff this week.
Yes, it's true. Also, it is kind of funny. Dave and I are covering some of the news this week, and we're talking about, say, Deadpool 3, which neither of us has a particular fondness for.
You've seen the Deadpool movies.
I have seen the Deadpool movies.
I am a heartless holdout who refuses to watch them merely because it vexes people.
Yes.
I'm like, I know it's good. And yet. So, yeah, this would be a good time to have Nick in, but he can't because because we have a little bit of Thanksgiving craziness.
Such is the way of the world in 2020, Dave.
Yeah.
By the way, do you realize that once Thanksgiving is over, several things will happen. One, Black Friday.
Right.
Two, it'll be end of December. And
yes.
Three, that means it's time for you and Nick to get started on your best of list of the year. What we call Randy's favorite time of the year. This is my time to shine. I've been making lists all year.
I'm like, did we even do our list last year?
I don't know. Who remembers?
No, I don't think we did.
Dave, your list is usually like, Did Dark Knight Returns come out last year? Was that this year? Can I put that on this list?
You know, I do the last minute list, but not as last minute as Nick. Nick is kind of like, I like to do it day of.
Like, God, that's crazy talk. You're going to be like, Dave, I'm just going to tell you right now, Spider-Man Life Story did not come out in 2020. Then we did do it last year, because we all talked about Spider-Man Life Story, I'm sure of it. I'm sure we did the best stuff.
Yes. No, but we just talked about that when it normally came out. I don't think we did a thing.
Well, hey, Russell, did we do a best of last year? Email us. If we did, say you did a best of last year or you did not. By the way, Russell did not know of whatever the movie was we told him he should know about last week.
It was something. Oh, God dang it. What was it?
By the way, Dave, do you suppose Russell's the only person listening to this podcast? Because no one else ever emails
us. It's quite possible. We would like to hear from more of you.
We will mention you by name in the podcast, too. Or, if you tell us not to, we will not do it.
Yeah, if you like send a subject line that's just like, I, Jason Murphy, listen to the Roguecast, we're going to mention
you. We
will
totally mention it. Also, this week, you're part of a rarefied group of people that, along with people who get the Rogues Gallery Dispatch, our weekly email newsletter, and who read our Facebook posts, you know about our special Black Friday sale.
Right. Go on, Randy. Tell me more about this special Black Friday sale, which we do every year, but is just slightly different this year.
So every year, we do a Black Friday sale. We always promote it. We do a big push. Well, this year, we decided to do it more of almost like quiet code word sale. So basically, anybody that comes in gets the deal, as long as you mention it. You heard it on the podcast, or you saw it on Facebook, whatever. And the deal is this. For every $25 you spend, you get $5 in bonus gift certificates.
Yes.
So
if you spend $100, you get 20?
That is correct.
$20 gift certificate. And usable next day onward.
Yep. You can either use them for yourself, or you can do some more Christmas shopping with them.
It's our way to trick people into coming back, but in actuality, it seems like it works out really well for people doing, especially gift shopping. And honestly, you can also, we encourage gifting yourself.
Yep. Reward yourself.
Not so often you go blind, but but in general, gift yourself. Go gift yourself.
Just come in and mention that. And shop here on Friday. I think Dave and Nick and I will all be here if it's
right.
Busy enough.
Part of the reason we're doing this is we didn't want the place to just become so packed with people.
Right.
And usually, for us, Black Friday isn't as big a thing as it is for some stores. The overall holiday season is. It's very important to us. We encourage you to shop local, and y'all have been beautiful people and have been doing really, really awesome stuff for us in general. We encourage you to keep it up.
Especially if it is just Russell listening to us.
Yes. Russell, could you come in and buy $5,000 worth of stuff someday during Christmas? It's that or we're on the streets.
But, we'll have our Black Friday, and Dave and Nick and I will be here. And, we are doing capacity of, like, 15 people. It's not going to be crowded. We're not going to be swarming people in here and grip COVID to everybody.
Right.
We're not doing the super spreader.
And if it should get a little bit full, we might, we might tell people to, hey, could you wait out here 5-10 minutes for somebody to leave?
Yep. And then we'll glare at whoever's in the store and be like, get out.
Yeah. We'll give them the look.
Yeah.
Nick, all right. Squint at him.
All right, so let's talk news. Last week we discussed this, and then the news came out right after we podcast that Wonder Woman, they have officially decided that Wonder Woman is going to debut in theaters and on HBO Max on December 25th.
Yeah, I believe we talked about that, and it was like that night they...
Yeah, it was literally that night.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So wait, what's the deal? It's going to debut on HBO Max?
They're going to put it in theaters, wherever theaters are open.
Right, a lot of them closed right now.
And it is going to be on HBO Max as well. And it's not... This is not like Mulan, where you got to pay an extra bonus. You just have to, if you have HBO Max, you can see it.
That's pretty notable.
I'm definitely going to watch it on Christmas. That'll be a Christmas movie.
I will probably do the same. It is sad to me. I mean, it seems like at this point, honestly, this country bungled COVID so badly that, you know, I'm sad that movie theaters seem like they're just going to have to maybe disappear for a little while.
Yeah.
And then hopefully make a comeback. Perhaps more as a, Rene, as you were suggesting, than the sort of Alamo boutique ones will be. The, you know, basically the people who are really passionate about movies and not, it's not just a...
The silver lining I have is if we lose, say, Cinemark and AMC and these big theater companies, and that every theater becomes like an Alamo, it's like run by film fans, that kind of thing.
Yep.
That could be an ultimately good thing. Now, it's going to put thousands, if not millions of people out of work.
Yep.
It's going to tank the economy. It may destroy the ability to do big budget movies. There's all kinds of stuff. I don't want it to happen.
Yeah.
But there could be a silver lining to this awful cloud.
Right. And it does seem at this point like it's inevitable. We just cannot go back to movies as they were right now. It's just can't.
I know when I go to the movie theater, I always like to lick the armrest, and you just can't do that right now.
I tried it. I tried it, and they said they were going to escort me out, and I said, not if I lick you first. I give you the COVID lick. That's actually on Christmas Day that it's releasing.
On Christmas Day.
That is the day that our Savior, Lord and Savior, Diana Prince, Princess Diana, came unto us with her mighty lasso.
I like this new continuity.
Yeah. that sounds pretty good. I've been wanting to see Wonder Woman 84 for a while now. I hope it's as fun as it could be.
Yeah, me too.
I'm
excited for it.
What else we got?
So speaking of movie stuff in development, they keep making announcements, even though I'm not sure what it's going to look like.
Sure.
Deadpool 3 is in development.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds is attached. It is not officially greenlit, but...
Ryan Reynolds, I wonder if they'll use him.
Kevin Feige is involved in the project.
Huh?
But they are hiring, instead of the people who did Deadpool 1 and 2, which, by the way, are decent movies, despite the fact they featured Deadpool. they are hiring Wendy Molyneux and Lizzie Molyneux-Logelin, who are known for their work on Bob's Burgers. And I'm like, you know what? Bob's Burgers is the right sense of humor for Deadpool. I can totally see that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Deadpool's so raunchy. Is Bob's Burgers that raunchy? I've never seen it. I know it's good, y'all. Don't bother to tell me.
It's got some good meta stuff. It's
Is it raunchy, though?
Not really, but it has...
I thought it was, like, heartwarming.
It has a heart, but it also is... It's weird.
Yeah,
it's weird
okay.
I can totally see it.
Okay, okay. I think we could say that we hope the new movie does well. We just would prefer that Deadpool not go and start gallivanting around the regular MCU.
I do not want to see Deadpool in the MCU. I do not want to see him palling around with Spider-Man.
He's going
to
graffiti it up with his fourth wall breaking.
No, I hate it.
He's going to like come in and he's going to be like humming that song that Cap danced to at the end of Endgame.
No.
He'll be like, do-do-do-do-do, and then a year later, like, I'll remember that time, and Deadpool knows about it.
I hate it.
Yeah. God, they will do that. That's horrible. I'm sorry I mentioned it.
Speaking of bad ideas that could go right, they're doing another Predator reboot.
But I think it's only because of the person involved that it sounds okay. Because, I understand, it's like the Alien Xenomorph franchise, it's just a really cool monster thing, and like, I don't think there's a lot of legs to most of those franchises, I do get that every generation wants some cool Xenomorph story. They're a really cool concept, everybody wants to kind of get to discover them on their own, and in fact, what they should do is watch the movie from 1979, and then watch the sequel from 1986, and then you're done. You're all done with Aliens.
Yes.
And for Predator, you watch the first Predator, and then you're all done.
That's true.
You can watch Predator 2
if Glover.
If you must watch Predator 2. But anyway, they did a reboot, quasi-reboot recently by Shane Black that was like a El Crapo.
I heard it was not great, yeah.
Yeah, and even Nick, who has a fondness for the movies which are less than stellar. I didn't say bad movies, less than stellar, was like, oh man, yeah, this is bad.
You stopped short of saying Nick has bad taste in movies. I mean, I know that's what you meant, but you stopped short of saying it on the podcast.
Listen, there's possible for people to have good taste in movies, but enjoy bad movies on their weird bad movie merits.
That's true. I have neither. Right. I do not have good taste in movies.
I have a stripe of it, but I don't have it the way some people do, where it's like their thing.
Yeah.
And Nick just has a high tolerance for all movies.
Yeah, he worked at a movie store.
He embraces them all in a giant Nick hug. Tell me who is doing this new Predator.
So this is Dan Trachtenberg, who directed 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Right. For people who haven't seen that, because I think it was pretty much a kind of a sleeper-type movie overall, it's a kind of... it's a suspense movie with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, where she is... But she's driving, and like a car runs her off the road, and when she wakes up, she's like tied up in like this fallout shelter that like this kind of large fallout shelter that John Goodman has set up, and it's he's just a crazy person. But like what he's specifically ranting about is that there's what does he say, that like the bombs have dropped
there's
some craziness in it that you don't know as you're watching it whether it's true or not. And the movie does address it, but it's very suspenseful, and it's kind of about what she has to do to try and see if she can get out of there. She's great in it. I think, like, in some ways, the smartest overall, like, hero I've seen in those kind of circumstances.
Yep.
John Goodman is fantastic. He's always good, but it's a really good suspenseful movie that has its off-kilter premise. They use it well. And I honestly thought it was one of the coolest suspense movies I've seen that had, like, especially like sort of a hook, a novelty hook like that of the last many years. So he could be the guy.
So they're calling it throughout this Deadline article or Screen Rant article, or whatever. They call it Predator 5, which by the way should definitely not call it.
Oh
that.
No!
But I think the trick could be there needs to be multiple Predators. You need to up the ante a little bit. I think that's one of the problems.
Well, right. It's like with the alien thing. You can't do the one lone, slowly creeping monster that picks off people one by one.
When we all know what it is.
Yep. And that was that's what worked in Alien, and that's what worked in the original Alien and the original Predator as well.
Well, and another thing that worked in the Aliens vs. Predator comics that they never made the movies work.
Mm-hmm.
But the comics had basically like it was in the future. It was in the Aliens timeline. And it was a woman who, like, basically trained as a predator on the Predator homeworld or something like that.
Oh, interesting.
And then she goes hunting aliens. And, like, that was cool. Like you get into their culture a little bit from someone
else. Right. They need to break the mold and think of things like that and not just, like, oh, well, what if it didn't land, in a jungle? What if it landed in a city? Or what if it landed in Mozambique? Or what if it landed in, South America? Right. It's got to be more than just where did he land. It's got – go ahead and, like – people like the Predators. Showing their world would be cool. And maybe they have. I don't even know if, like, Robert Rodriguez's movie had it. I don't know. But work up some cool thoughts on it where it's got to be more than just what we've seen.
Or – go the rom-com route.
Oh, interesting.
To meet the Predators. Meet the Predators. And they're it's a Predator who comes to Earth, and he finds a girl, and he has to take her home to meet his crazy Predator family.
I dated a Predator.
They're like, she doesn't even hunt. She's a vegan, and he's a Predator. And they meet cute, and they go back to his homeworld. How about that?
Is it Chris Hansen?
Yeah,
the Predator. Yeah, he shows up with his team of Predator hunters.
Yes, and they are slaughtered mercilessly by an alien being.
We'd like you to sit down. Ah!
Yes, probably don't do that.
Anyway, this movie, it seems like a bad idea, but because of the team, I would at least look forward to watching the trailer, see if they can maybe pull it off.
Transformers War for Cybertron Earthrise got a dead release date. We already talked about the trailer.
It's kind of a long name.
It is.
Transformers War for Cybertron is the whole thing, and the first one was called...
Siege.
And that was like six or eight episodes on Netflix?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to do another six or eight episodes, and then another six or eight episodes rounding out the trilogy,
and that'll
right?
Be it. Yeah.
And that's it. So what do we have, a release date for Earthrise?
We have December 30th.
Okay. So we're going to get Wonder Woman, and we're going to get all the nerdy stuff in December.
So the final installment is called Kingdom, and will draw influence from the Beast Wars animated series. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, that one's weird to me because I'm not a Beast Wars kid, but I know that it was well-liked, and I have faith in this creative team to find a way to fuse it into the story. I did understand that, like, there was stuff from, like, the G1 Transformers continuity that would sometimes make its way into Beast Wars.
Yeah.
Like, weirdly, they did a storyline where Starscream got killed in, like, the Transformers movie, you know, in 86.
Yeah.
And they did, like, a few stories later on in the regular cartoon where Starscream's ghost, however, reappeared and, like, tried to get revenge on Megatron what's his face? He became somebody else.
Galvatron
yeah. Anyway, whatever. Somehow Beast Wars referenced that. Like his ghost shows up on there. So, like, they seem to exist in the same universe, but, like, in different timelines and stuff. And again, I would have hopes that these guys are going to figure out the right cool thing to do with that.
Well, that first season was really good.
Yeah, it was a blast.
Dave, on the long titles, it is like the there's one I can't remember any of them right now, but it's always like the
Ballistic X versus Sephir.
Yes, it's like the multiple titles: Transformers, War for Cybertron, Earthrise.
Those things can be real total mouthfuls. The only good long title is Remo Williams: The Adventure Begins.
That's what I was going to mention.
I bet Russell Sinclair has seen that.
Which is funny because, of course, The Adventure began and ended.
Yes, never has a title so not egotistically, pridefully flaunted its franchise potential.
Get ready for our franchise,
only to become nothing.
The last bit of news is a game thing that's coming out. We've carried the WizKids, like, there's a lot of minis coming out. They do this Warlock Tiles, which is all this 3D terrain. It's really cool.
It's like for D&D and stuff.
So this ties into the Warlock. This is actually compatible with the Warlock Tiles. It is the Yawning Portal, the famous inn.
That's located above the Undermountain Dungeon, in the Forgotten Realms, the most famous setting in Dungeons & Dragons.
So it's like, it's a big three, it's this giant diorama. It's like a three-level dungeon. It's got, like, the little pit in the middle of it.
Yep.
It's scaled for minis. It is $350. It is a giant expensive thing, but it is also super cool looking. I'm not sure we'll have one for the shelf, but we may see if anybody orders it. We might wind up picking it up.
I would imagine it'd be one of those where we would probably have to ask for a deposit on that one. But it is super cool. If you are a gamer with a little bit of money to throw around, I mean, the Yawning Portal is a super cool place to have. It's one of the iconic locations in all of D&D.
Plus, if you want to run an adventure that's like Roadhouse, where your bouncer is at a fantasy tavern, that would be the place to run it.
That'd actually be a pretty dope idea.
Yeah, you'd be like,
you know what I would, I think want to work up, if they don't have some version of this, basically hand-to-hand non-lethal combat rules.
Yeah.
It only becomes lethal when the big bad guy, like, gets dangerous, and I think he kills Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
I think in there.
Yeah.
What a jerk.
But Sam Elliott in this case would be an orc.
Like half-orc Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
I'm down for this. I think, ye old Roadhouse is a concept that needs to happen, and that everybody should plunk down $350 or whatever to get this set for
everyone should run this campaign. In fact, I'm gonna go write it up right now.
You know, he was supposed to be in Roadhouse, like, what was he, like, a philosophy student who, like, ended up becoming a bouncer as he, like, tried to find himself or something like that.
I've never seen Roadhouse.
No, I spoiled the thing about Sam Elliott then.
Sam Elliott dies?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think.
I don't know. It's not much of a spoiler, Dave.
You know how, like, in slightly schlocky movies, they got to show you how bad the bad guy is?
Yeah.
That's how bad the bad guy is.
So Sam Elliott.
It's his buddy.
Who's just there drinking.
But yes, Patrick Swayze's character is supposed to be kind of like this Zen guy who was like a philosophy or a psychiatrist. Maybe he's like psychiatrist or a psychology student. And who kind of, like, couldn't find his way and ended up becoming this bouncer. But he has a sort of Zen attitude and occasionally spouts philosophical flourishes.
It's time to be nice until it's not time to be nice.
Yeah, that's from
something like
that was Sun Tzu originally.
Oh, yeah,
Sun
Tzu. Yeah, a lot of stuff in the Art of War. The Art of War and bouncing roadhouses.
I don't remember exactly where, but I think it's in the back half of it.
It's in the appendix. By the way, if you ever find yourself in a roadhouse working as a bouncer, remember to be nice until it's time not to be nice. Sincerely, love, Sunsu.
Your pal Sunsu.
Your pal Sunsu.
Author of The Tao of Poo.
All right, that's the news such as it is, and we'll be back in a minute to talk about comics. We are talking comics week of Wednesday, November 25th, and it's weird to me that I'm still boggled that we're in November already. This year has dragged, and then like suddenly November like sped through.
Well, I think part of it is that one gray hellscape day after another blended into each other.
Yeah, you may be right.
And so it's like, oh, a lot of time has passed. It was all grueling, but they did just blend.
Yeah.
It was like if somebody took a bunch of mold and just spread it over an area, but it's still mold.
Interesting. So comics this week, not a ton of new number ones. In fact, there's only like one Marvel number one.
Yep, DC
has no one number one.
Yeah. And then there were some other, you know, there's a few indie outings, and there's some goodies in the mix.
Yeah, but no, why don't you talk about the DC one, because you read through that one.
Yeah, I thought this was an interesting thing that DC is doing. I guess it's a miniseries, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Called The Other History of the DC Universe. This is a kind of homaging, I guess, an old DC project called The History of the DC Universe, which just kind of recaps stuff from, like, their... basically caveman days through to the Old West, through to the present. But this one, when they talk about the other history, they are essentially talking about marginalized communities, like minority communities in the DC universe, and somewhat kind of relensing some notable characters, essentially DC minority characters, via the Hollywood writer John Ridley, who... he did the movie 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
He's done some other stuff, too. Like, I think he did that American Crime. Like, he was the showrunner or something like that.
I think that's right.
That's
They filmed something for their store.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
We never met him.
Yeah, but it was our brush... we're probably 2 degrees of separation from him.
Yeah,
so...
He was literally in the store. I just never talked to him.
Oh, man, that's crazy. And so this first, it seems like each issue of this, and this is in DC's Black Label format, they're oversized, just like the regular Black Label stuff, and it's kind of, I guess I'd call it illustrated prose, but it does still read as a comic, is Black Lightning. Each issue, I think, is going to spotlight some other hero, but this one is Black Lightning. Now, Jefferson Pierce, a.k.a. Black Lightning, yeah. I have not watched this show ever. But in the comics, I think he was kind of portrayed as what would be a conservative black man. Would that be somewhat accurate?
No, because he was like a lefty teacher. He was a principal and stuff.
But he was kind of a pull your... In this, they portray him as a pull yourself up by your bootstraps, tough love kind of guy.
Interesting, okay.
Huh. And I don't know... So this is set in a very specific period of time where this has like a timeline that's, you know, this is not hard set DC continuity. This is
right.
Something of a rethink of it. So like in the 1970s, that's when the Justice League forms. And in it, from his observation, they were almost like a counterpoint to kind of America being down on itself about like Vietnam and stuff like that. And they're like, so the Justice League forms there, and that's like Flash and Superman and all those guys. All
right.
And, you know, the 80s, sort of the upbeat Reagan era is like when Superman flourishes. Part of the reason I mentioned the conservative vibe, not that it's like such a big thing in here, he is still kind of like, yeah, obviously very progressive in a lot of ways, but he's definitely he is a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of guy. And he's not completely opposed to Reagan, which is interesting. But he also doesn't like... there's a lot of things he doesn't like about him. But that's the kind of book it is. They're going to straight up talk about history that was going on in these times, as well as relensing his time with the Outsiders, his early brushes with everybody from Superman to Vixen, like other basically African-American superheroes. He actually has a distaste a little bit for Jon Stewart, who, from afar, he feels like is a guy who's actually not a good representation. He's like the also-ran. He's like the, oh, when Hal Jordan's busy, he gets a shot at it, but he's really not a great hero.
Huh.
And then later on, it actually kind of bookends with a really interesting conversation between them. So it's meant to be kind of a challenging look at, like, the DC Universe through the eyes of a guy who feels like he was marginalized. He is definitely, like... He grew up with a kind of an almost Bruce Wayne-esque story in this, where his parents were killed.
Yeah.
And
by the way, don't buy an apartment in Suicide Slum. It's a bad neighborhood.
You know, they do talk about how, like, there's some sweet stuff in it about there's some good writing, I think, in it, where he about how he met his wife and they decide to take their shot at it.
I just think that you probably shouldn't move to a neighborhood called where they have suicides right in the name.
It's not the official name.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
I don't know if this was something I had seen before, but you actually see them driving past a billboard that says something like Metropolis's South Side, and letters have been crossed out to make it into Suicide.
Ah.
And then somebody scrawled Slum under there. Yeah.
Like Gotham City probably should not have Crime Alley.
Again, I don't think it's on the signs.
Here, son, we'll take a shortcut through Rich People Get Murdered Street.
That was a mistake, Thomas. but anyway, it's essentially, it's because this is prose with lots and lots of illustrations, and there's, like, big illustrations, too, so it is both a meaty read, you will get a lot out of it,
yeah.
But it's also, like, not so dense that I found it, like, ponderous. But you do get a lot in here, and so there's, like, his actual writing style is pretty notable, and I thought strong. It's interesting to see, what does he think of Batman? What does he think of Superman? What does he think of all these things growing up? You know, what's it like being a superhero in the 80s? What's it like being a superhero in the 90s? Specifically an African-American superhero. How does he manage to keep his marriage together? And it is clearly taking into account all of the stories that were being written exactly the way they were written. Like, I think there's some incidents he mentions from, like, The Outsiders, and I'm like, this sounds like it was definitely an actual Outsider story. Mm-hmm. anyway, with a story like this, it's meant to push some buttons, and there was a few cases where I'm like, oh, I don't know if I love this part. But I thought it was, like, very well done, and I'm interested to see what he thinks about the other, you know, all the other characters that were... I don't even know who else is going to be in this. Do you know?
I don't. I feel like Katana's getting it, but I'm not sure.
I could see that. She was in The Outsiders, right?
Yep.
Yeah, she does. She gets mentioned, but I think they don't. What's her real name?
Tatsu.
He calls her Tatsu in this, and yeah. So, it's not going to all be like. It's not all The Outsiders, is it? No.
Metamorpho is going to get an issue. It's tough being an elephant man.
He's a weird monster man kind of dude.
I am an element man in modern day America, and it's hard.
But, you know, there is his breakdown of the psychology of the team, where he's like, he says on some levels they were, like, really good for each other, and that those are some of his closest friends. But then when they broke up, it was kind of like the time had come, and he felt like they were also starting to, like, maybe not help each other as much. And it's one of those things where I'm like, I'm sure this kind of reflects how the writing was kind of meandering at, like, near the end or something like that. But it's interesting stuff, and I recommend people give the other history of the DC Universe a shot.
Marvel has Power Pack number 1, which I think it says Power Pack Outlawed, but that is a tie into the Outlawed story.
Underage superheroes are a no-go right now in the Marvel Universe.
Outlawed or something called Kamala's Law, because Ms. Marvel and her secret identity got caught up in something, and they're practicing vigilante just without a license, some crazy thing. But the important thing is that some of the Power Kids have grown up a little bit. Like, Katie is still a little kid, and this actually opens with her explaining the Power Pack in a little hand-drawn comic.
Yep.
Very cute. But it looks like Alex has grown up and is now working in space somehow. Julie, this is the Julie from Runaways.
Yeah, she and Alex, they mentioned in this, Randy, were both in space on some adventure, basically in whatever other Power Pack or some other series that was going on. Right. Maybe they were New Mutants or something.
Yep. Basically, an old foe of theirs comes about. They decide to go after him. They're debating. Katie wants to tell their parents about the powers, and they don't. It's a good first issue. I think with Power Pack, one of the tricks is you can't rely on the nostalgia of fans because it's not a big enough fan base.
Right. It was always a little bit of a cult series.
Yeah. But this was a fun. This is a fun first issue.
Yeah.
If you like the idea of sort of a family of superheroes in a different vein of like the kids superheroes, this was a good read. I like the art quite a bit.
Yeah, I liked it as well. And I do. You know, I actually bought Power Pack number one off the stands back in the day. I think actually aging them a little bit is a good idea because, you know, in general with teen superhero teams, you don't want to press too much on the, oh, this is really dangerous. Anybody would be stupid to let teens go out. Because, you know what, the deal is, like everybody has discovered, teens are, like, it's such a kind of dramatic time of life. It's super fun to write stories that are set in those days. That's why Spider-Man is such a, like, you know, younger Spider-Man is such a fun character.
Yep.
But if you're, like, going to be like, you know, oh no, he's in such danger, isn't that irresponsible? Well, then you're kind of missing the point, which is why this, I think maybe the outlaw premise of the of this overall initiative at Marvel doesn't strike for me. But these characters, by aging them a little bit so they're not quite so young, it does take off some of the sting of like, oh, isn't this risky?
Yeah.
I like seeing the kids. It's a good family.
They got the voice down.
Like, yeah.
The voice is right. There's a couple indie books in the first issue this week. I Walk With Monsters, which is Vault Comics. It is basically about a young girl who has a friend who sometimes transfers into a terraforming monster, and they hunt men who prey on the vulnerable, in part because of JC's past, which she, they're sort of hinted here is something bad happened to her family, and maybe that her father was abusing them or something. It's dark but really interesting.
I missed if you said this. There's like someone who like maybe physically transforms into like a monster
as
a response to this.
Yep.
So it's almost like blending sort of like the notion of metaphorical monsters with some literal monsters. Only like the one of the literal monsters is someone who has is dealing with trauma, right? Like what if you could respond back by cutting loose on a sort of more feral level?
Right. It's really good. It's written by Paul Cornell, who's written a bunch of stuff for Marvel.
Yeah.
It's I liked it quite a bit. I like the art a lot. I would definitely recommend, if you have a fondness for horror at all, give this one a look. Similarly, if you have any fondness for heists, there's a book from Aftershock called Kaiju Score. That is K-A-I-J-U.
Yep, like the big
giant monsters.
Yeah, big monsters like Godzilla.
Basically, the pitch, and this is, Dave, I think, correctly nailed it. This is, if you like Chew and that kind of stuff, this is right up your alley. But they're also doing like an Ocean's 11 kind of thing, where they get together this team of people. It is much more a heist story than anything else. The kaiju thing in it is that this is a world where kaiju happens. Kaiju attacks just happen and they're used to it. But they've got weather reports and stuff. So this guy is like, hey, I want to rob this museum, and it looks like there's going to be a kaiju coming out on land. So when it does, it's the perfect time to rob the museum because the skeleton crew of security, they'll lock down the museum. And it's like, basically, the kaiju is like a hurricane.
No, that's interesting, because I've seen movies that are, you know, in some way, shape, or form, take advantage of a natural disaster, or like Blizzard and Die Hard 2, whatever that stupid hard rain movie was with Christian Slater, where they like try and rob a town while it's flooding and stuff.
Take advantage of the hard rain.
Yeah, I half wonder if he was watching one of those movies, and he's like, what if it was like Godzilla?
Anyway, his cast of characters is good, the art is good. I'm a sucker for a good heist story, and I thought this was a really good first issue.
Yeah, it's a fun premise.
Those are all like the first issues and stuff. I did want to mention Chew, the sequel series to Chew, also called Chew but spelled C-H-U, wraps up with a pretty good number 5 this week. He's going to be doing a different story arc, so the next one's going to come out summer next year, I think. But the main story wraps up really well here.
I don't think I have too much else to mention. You know, there's second issues of the Black Hammer spinoff Colonel Weird, second issue of the Dune prequel miniseries, House Atreides.
Right.
And on Nick's behalf, I can't speak to it at all, but the final three chapters, that is to say, three issues in the X of Swords, or Ten of Swords, X-Men series come out this week. It wraps it up in a book called Ten of Swords Destruction. You know, it's basically the bookend finale to it. And I asked Nick how it was, and he seemed to quite like it, like how it somewhat restructured some things in some X books by the end of it. and he seems to have positive things to say.
Yeah.
Later on, I will interrogate him more deeply and find out the specifics of, like, what happened. Does Wolverine have a new haircut at the end of it? Does he get his heat claws back?
No and no.
Where's Callisto?
Under the water.
Polaris, Magneto's daughter or not?
Yes.
All right, those kind of questions are what I'm going to be throwing at him, just rapid fire like that.
We do, I believe, have all of X of Swords in stock right now.
Oh, yeah.
Probably
so, like,
not for long, but we've got like at least one or two issues of every issue.
Yeah, so yeah.
People could pick it up and try it out if they want to, the whole stories. Also, there is a second issue of Scumbag. Rick Remender's crazy, like, terrible person gets, like, superpowers.
Yep.
And the finale of Tom Taylor's Suicide Squad, which has a really good final issue.
Oh, yeah, I need to, I for sure want to read that, but I need to catch up on an issue or two prior to it. But yeah, that's been a good series. I hope it in some way, shape, or form, those characters in it continue to have life, unless they all die in this final issue, don't tell me. I know it's Suicide Squad, so that is a very real possibility.
Yeah, but it's not actually just the official name. The official name is Task Force X. It's like Suicide Slum. They don't operate on a Suicide Slum.
It's Southside Squad, actually.
Southside Squad, yeah. Other stuff on my list this week. Department of Truth number 3. Really liking this sort of weird conspiracy, creepy book from Image. Shang-Chi number 3. I'm really liking their take on Shang-Chi. Strange Things Science Camp number 3, which basically puts Dusty and the other kids at a science camp up against what looks like a Jason-esque serial killer.
Nice.
Maestro number 4, which is the penultimate part of that series.
That's the Hulk villain Maestro.
Yep. Another bit of the Amazing Spider-Man Last Remains story, and another great issue of Daredevil. Zdarsky's Daredevil is one of my favorite things that's out on Marvel, and it continues to delight. So,
you know, we've talked about how many good runs there have been on Daredevil over the years. Like he has like maybe it's the best track record overall in comics.
It's true.
And what's interesting is that a lot of them are long runs. They're not like just like a year or something, but like often many years long. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty impressive.
Also want to mention that Criminal Volume 3 hardcover comes out this week. The first two are going to be coming out from Image because they're reprints of the Marvel editions. Mm-hmm. But if you have not read Criminal, this is Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips at their Pure Crime Best. I love this series.
It's super good.
This one in particular is like they relaunched it, so you can read them in any order. Like they build in this world of like this crime world these got. But basically, they're all sort of standalone crime stories in the lines of Richard Stark or Elmore Leonard or some of that
yep.
kind of stuff.
I think people who like kind of enjoy the, I'm going to say, sort of seedy but like just super compelling parts of like Goodfellas mm-hmm. and other movies like that. That's what it feels like you're walking into in Criminal. The dialogue and the characters are just so fascinating and good. You're always going to be drawn into it. In some ways, I don't think of myself as like a big crime fan,
yep.
but like almost everybody can like watch Godfather or Goodfellas or some movie or Scarface. You know, one of those movies where you're watching bad people do kind of bad things. Sometimes they've got a good streak in them. Sometimes they don't.
Yep.
But you those are the stories where you're just like, I gotta watch this.
Yeah.
And yeah, Criminal always pulls that off.
All right, I think that's it for us this week. We don't have any topics to cover this week.
Yeah, we're going to kind of keep it on the short
yeah.
side of things.
But everybody have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, however you're celebrating it, or if you're not celebrating it and you're being cool and staying home, we applaud you, and hopefully you can play some cool video games and order some awesome takeout.
Yep, and if you get a chance, come in on Black Friday.
Yes.
We'd love to see you.
We'll be there, and you know, honestly, it's cool just to chat it up with people, who, especially if we haven't seen them in a little bit.
Yep. And until next time.
Yo, Joe!
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening!